Welcome, everyone, to our 26th episode of But Why Though, a philosophy-themed comedy podcast with comedian Josh Carter
and philosopher Nancy Lopez.
And today we're joined by my professor, actually, Kate. And Kate is a cultural anthropologist and writer who teaches at Brooklyn College and at the Brooklyn Institute for Social Research and edits Spectre Journal. You can find them on Twitter at Kate Griff and occasionally podcasting at 4QCom at www.patreon.com. We'll share the link later.
Also join us, my good friend from comedy. He's all over the place in the city. I don't know about right now because it's a pandemic, but hopefully during reopening, you'll see him around the Stress Factory. He's at the Stand, all over. Gordon Baker Bone, everybody.
Hey, how's it going? And
welcome.
And then also joining us, we got one of my good friends. She's a technical producer, podcaster, and radio host. Give it up for Crystal Grant.
Hello.
And I'm sorry, Kate. Your last name is Griffin, right?
Griffith.
Yeah. Sorry, Kate Griffin. I felt weird. Kate? She's like, Professor Kate, and you have all these accolades, and we just know you as Kate. I'm like, is she like Prince? Like one name?
Yeah, that's
one
what name? It is. That's exactly what it's like. I got my Prince tattoo right here.
Too, oh, nice. Oh, look. Wow. Perfect.
Oh, wow.
So I randomly, now that it's a pandemic, I'm just trapped at home. I'm on Facebook just looking for new things to get mad at, little microaggressions and stuff like that. So I used to go to sleepaway camp. Usually this is a tough thing for most Black people to admit about their childhoods when they've gone, but I've gone. That was a stupid joke, but whatever, fuck it. But anyway, my camp, Frost Valley, and a bunch of different YMCA summer camps are removing regional Native American tribe names and terms from all around camp in effort to self-police from cultural appropriation. And they sent a memo out saying, to give more consistency and better relevance to our village names, acknowledging that many of the existing names were not pertinent to Frost Valley, and some use Native American terms and names to which we have no cultural ties or rights to use. But what I say to this kind of thing is, it's not even the same thing as calling a team the Washington Redskins, like having like Native American tribe names and likenesses. That's how I learned about what tribes were in the regions that are now, that the camp is now in. It's an educational thing. Why can't, if anything, this seems like the last step in colonialism to me. Let's erase the last of their memories. Like why, it's not the same. Even like the Washington Redskins, like I think that a lot of white people, like the common white people, they understand that things are offensive, but they don't understand why it's offensive. So they'll take it and they'll try to be good hearted and coming from a good place, but then they're not, it's just like, you can't even get the words for it. It's like that frustrating, you know, like I feel like the Washington Redskins, the reason why that's inappropriate is because redskin is a derogatory term. Like, I think the Seminole tribe likes that Florida State calls themselves the Seminoles because it brings a lot of like money and it's also like now the most known tribe. But even that is different and like not as much as just having it being an educational name, because at least you could say Florida State's even a little bit worse than this, because Florida State makes some kind of money off of it. This camp doesn't make money off of just teaching people about what the Native American tribe names are. You know what I'm saying? So I figured let's round up some of my favorite comedians and personalities and someone who's a anthropologist with many degrees to break this all down for us. Let's once and for all break down what cultural appropriation really means. So if you want to take it from there, Kate, why don't you give us like a little brief definition officially?
Well, so I do want to say, I think cultural appropriation is not like a technical term for anthropologists. But I have thought, you know, it's come up a lot with my students in anthropology class. And so I've thought a lot about kind of inductively using like an ethnographic method, looking at how people use cultural appropriation as a term to try to figure out what the functional definition of it is, right? Mm-hmm. And I have really come to the conclusion, I think actually in agreement with parts of what you just said, though maybe not all of it, that
no, I understand.
people really use cultural appropriation to describe a bunch of kind of discrete different things that, you know, might all be bad, might be bad in different ways. Kind of exactly what you're just saying about like how people might know something's wrong. White people might know something's wrong, but they don't know exactly why it's wrong. And so I have a little mental list of things that I think that cultural appropriation is used to describe that are kind of distinct from each other. So one of them is like just outright stealing somebody's intellectual work, right? That can be identified, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, there's a song and you gank the whole lyrics or you take the whole melody and just move on. Like you wrote it. And in fact, you know, actually, you know, a Black person or a person of color, somebody else wrote it and you just figure you can get away with it because nobody's going to check on that or nobody's going to give a shit whether you did it or not, right? That's mm-hmm. that's stealing, right? Then there's kind of like stealing collective intellectual property, right? The way that colonialism works means that often the like individual contributions of people to a given work have been erased, but also, right, it, before capitalism, before colonialism, human intellectual labor worked that way. We didn't have individual intellectual labor in that way. There wasn't a sense of competing, right, to see who's going to come up with the best this or that. So you have these whole categories of art, of music, of, you know, language. I mean, the whole range of cultural products, right, that are really collectively produced by some group of people over a period of time, right? And you see lots of examples of that, like in fashion is a common place, right, where they just sort of lift an entire, you know, mode of dress or decoration or whatever and just steal it without any kind of acknowledgement or, you know, compensation.
But really, if you go off of that, isn't every kind of clothing cultural appropriation? Because only indigenous people invented colors, you know? So if you took colors, that's something. Because at a certain point, isn't like, aren't we at where we are because of cultural mixing to a certain degree?
Yes. Which, hold up one second, though, because I just want to say two other kinds of things. Because you're right about cultural mixing. And there's no cultural anthropologist that doesn't like cultural mixing. But I think why people use the term cultural appropriation is to describe like a power differential that exists, right? When it's not mixing, right? It's there's an expression of a power differential. That's what the word appropriation means, right? Like we've taken something and you're not giving it back. You're not giving back credit. You're not giving back any kind of exchange, right? Because the other stuff is like other things that people use to say cultural appropriation is like, you know, your example of the Washington
racial slurs.
Skins, yes.
I shouldn't have said that word at all.
Yeah, huh? You should have. But that, you know, it's just straight up racism. Like people do racist things, like wear blackface, and that gets called cultural appropriation. And to me, it's like, is that cultural appropriation or just like
racist?
It's just fucking racist. Yeah. And so, you know, there's a few more things on the list, but I just want to say it's the power differential that I think really defines it, and also the kind of lack of exchange. But I also would say that I do think there are mistaken uses of cultural appropriation where maybe that power differential or lack of exchange there might be one or the other, right? Or there might be both, right? That in fact, these are actually exchanges between sort of equal but different groups of people or individuals, and that there is actually an exchange involved. So that's how I sort of analyze the question of cultural appropriation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then
go ahead. No, I was just gonna say I agree with many of your points, Professor. Can I call you Professor? It feels like
you can call me
right
Kate. You can call me Professor.
Kate?
You can call
All right,
Professor Kate. That's what my students call me. I like it because they don't have to say Griffiths.
I think a lot of the miscommunication when it comes down to what cultural appropriation is the mere fact that, for me personally, it's the financial side about cultural appropriation. A lot of things have been taken from many people of color and not given the credit. We can start off with people like Elvis. We can start off with looking at the Kardashians, if you want to stay recent. Even more recent, we could talk about the culture that's happening on TikTok, where there's young people of color that are trying to get these opportunities that their white counterparts are getting, but not getting the financial gains. Mm-hmm. They invent these things and they are very brilliant kids, and they make these things up and they share it with the world. And then someone white, for example, does the same, takes what they done and get a financial reward for simply taking.
Usually worse. Let's be straight up about that. Usually it's not as good either.
Yeah. It's quite terrible. It was just on Jimmy Fallon. Just on Jimmy Fallon. He had some white lady. I don't know if she was an actress or not, but she was doing one of the latest TikTok dances and everyone's going nuts for it. And then you compare it to the person that invented it and shared it with the world, who's not getting, who's not seen on television. Imagine how powerful that would be to, for someone that is 11 years old to see their peer on NBC showing what they created.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
This happens at the beginning of time. Like you were saying, like music, like Chuck Berry. Like,
yeah.
Or like my, what am, I guess, culture, an example for cultural appropriation that stands out to me is like, for example, like African cultural patterns and cloths, right? You were talking about patterns and colors and all that stuff. So like seeing some patterns or cloths or whatever that's like specific to a certain group or a region in like Urban Outfitters printed on like, I don't know, some cheap cotton, like that's foul. That's an example to me that's like, that's blatant like cultural appropriation and just stealing like, and it ties into like the financial aspect too. Like, so these people, they're from like maybe a poorer country and they can't really capitalize off their own, like, I don't know, clothing and inventions and stuff. And then somebody who has the capital and has the exposure just takes it and steals it and then runs with it. And it's basically like,
Can I say one thing about the African prints? Because this is actually some anthropology here for you, which is, and I think this is why I'm emphasizing the power differential question, because actually most of the prints that we might be familiar with, like from West Africa that we would see, you know, like in an African shop or like now used in the example you're talking about, Urban Outfitters, and they steal all kinds of shit. They also steal like street art right off the street and whatever else.
Yes.
But yeah, like,
I feel like corporations steal from like any kind of little man, you know?
It's the definition of what a corporation is. But yeah, so like, but those actual prints were not originally from Africa. They're called Dutch prints precisely because they came from the Dutch colonial period. But the way that they are used, the way that they're mixed, the meanings that they've been assigned in the last 400 years are very much cultural products of Africa, right? And in a way, like a resistance to or a way of reacting to a positive kind of response to the way that colonial powers actually divided people up and assigned them different nationalities and even ethnicities based on things that prior to colonialism wouldn't have been identities in the same way, right? They became like identities through this process of colonial repression. And so, you know, one of the kinds of ways that I think people get messed up about this is like, they could come back at you, Crystal, and say like, you know, well, those aren't originally African. That's not cultural appropriation. Those are European patterns because they're Dutch. But like, the point is actually the power differential. The point is actually, you know, there's a cultural sharing that happened one direction because of this colonial process, but it doesn't come back the other direction as a kind of sharing or exchange or mutual engagement, cultural engagement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's... Well,
all of them are from the Dutch lands.
Well, the cloth pattern prints, yeah, mostly, but then there's also things that have been transposed from beadwork to cloth prints. So there's patterns that originally started out as beaded patterns. That's like more Southern Africa. That then became in the form of like printed cloth. But that's just because of where printed cloth initially came to be, right? So that's more or less the history of that particular process. But the meanings that they're assigned and the way it gets like attached to, like for example, the like Charlie Brown zigzag that you see a lot.
Is African. I've also seen...
Yeah, it is, right. And the kind of cultural, it has a lot of symbolic meaning and purpose and so forth. None of that came from Europe. None of that came from the Dutch, right? But and the zigzag existed prior to colonialism and other patterned forms of dress and so forth. But like most people in many parts of Africa were not wearing cloth clothes, you know, prior to colonialism, or if they were, they weren't printed, right? Because that's a technology that came from that actually Europeans expropriated from India and then took all over the world. So that's the kind of process there. But that means, you know, I think, anyway, just to say, I think it's worth thinking about power rather than trying to figure out what each piece of culture, how it dates back into the mists of time to some separate little individual cultures that pre-existed everything, because that's not really the history of the world. We had a lot of cultural diffusion and a lot of cultural mixing. There's multiple cultural sources for many items that we might find, but when somebody, but that doesn't negate the fact that there's a cultural meaning now, right, for certain kinds of images, certain kinds of sounds, certain arrangements of you know, any kind of cultural material. And so that's what's being appropriated, not some like genetic history of a certain look or a certain color or something like that.
I agree with you, but also like I feel like the patterns and like I feel like it's a little bit deep, like for me personally, for example, with like the appropriation that I see on a daily basis, I know that it's not just about like the design or print or a certain dance or anything like that. It's more of the what feels like the being ignored, a whole entire culture being ignored and being pushed to the side and just used yet again for not only monetary gain, but just for entertainment and I can't even, I'm trying to say the words, but
like you it of it's like it's honor, it's sacredness, it's you know, it's like legacy, it's history, just stripping it and just using it as a pawn in their grand scheme of things when it comes to like money, just making money or just trying to come out with the next coolest best thing or whatever, and it just diminishes what it is that you people have created with meaning and love and their blood, sweat and tears and so forth.
Like I totally agree with you. Like having this conversation, and when like I found out we were going to talk about cultural appropriation, the first person that popped into my mind was Jay-Z. Jay-Z does a song with a group called Dead Presidents, and they talk about how white people, for example, just messed up the hood, and now all of a sudden, everyone wants to be hood. They want to dress a certain way. They want to talk a certain way. What used to be made fun of is now what is cool, what used to be shunned and told was bad is now a marketable asset. And it's just, for me, it's infuriating to see Jay-Z go, you see, they did this to us and they're trying to take our culture. But then the same part, he basically did that with his own Rockaware label. He took a New York style and a New York culture and sold it to every white person in the Midwest.
But is it wrong to sell your clothes to, I mean, I guess, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, but yeah, it is denim. It's not.
It is denim, but like it was denim. It was not the denim that, let's say, people in Montana were used to. Like if you,
they were wearing Wranglers until Lil Nas X started wearing Wranglers. And I don't know what they're wearing now, but I'm sure.
I just have this picture of like these hick ass white people with like big Rockaware jean suits now.
Yeah,
I didn't even realize that was a thing.
What'd you say?
What was that?
Sorry. I was saying, how do you stop someone from buying your products? Like, I mean, I don't know. I kind of feel like to a certain extent, because like this was his style in the corner and so forth. And he took it and he made it a bigger market and was able to sell it to people who originally would look down upon him or the corner boys or that fashion and style. So in a way, it sort of flipped. In a way.
But are the white people who wear Rockaware the types that are looking down on black people?
Good question.
I don't think so. I think they're the type that we beat up.
No. Right?
Because
this is based on my own like ideas for my own stereotypes for middle of the country. I mean, we're all from New York City, so I guess we can't really say it. Like you need to have a lot of information to like to judge whether something's appropriation, right? Otherwise, we're kind of being prejudiced and assuming that these people are part of, like there are certain people who out themselves, right, as being appropriate. Like Iggy Azalea, for instance, is like a girl from Australia. She comes here. We know she's from Australia. We know she's doing a Southern accent. She's saying she's like struggling in Miami. And then she like, we know that she's not down for the culture when she gets into a Twitter beef with Lupe Fiasco.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you have all the evidence, you could say, but if I just see a random white person like walking in baggy jeans, I might just be like, yeah, that looks pretty funny, but am I upset at the guy? Maybe he's just poor and could only afford like a Goodwill, you know? No, like if you see, like if I saw a white guy wearing a Rockefeller jean jacket walking down the street, like our old example, that's what I'm saying. I don't know. Maybe Five runs following,
reason,
right? Yeah.
The reason why I think it's cultural appropriation is because Rock Aware, FUBU, our products that we sold to let's call it mainstream America, was not cheap. It was very expensive. We took a white t-shirt that cost us $2. We used to wear large white t-shirts. I think they were called Galaxy Tees, but like between $2 to $6. We took that and we sold it to middle America for what, $28? Because they wanted to be like us. We took the pain that we endured and turned it into a business. And I understand that, like, we are selling this, but, and we shouldn't get mad at something that we sell. But to a certain degree, yeah, we sold it. But the way it's been used afterwards, you can still have I want to say anger, but mood about it. Mm-hmm. Or to say it like my hood cousin, feel some type of way. I don't know who, what's the right thing to say in that situation.
You just have to kind of, like, I guess... To a certain extent, I see what you mean. Because like I said, the dope boy on the corner is supposed to be somebody who's looked down upon and shunned and so forth. But then you kind of laugh at the irony of, like, all right, well, the same person that you looked down upon, I took my whole style and priced it up and sold it to you. And now I got more money than you, or your whole family, whatever. So you kind of just, like, kind of got to laugh at it, and kind of, like, imitation is what, best form of flattery, right? So, yes. Like, if you're thinking in that way,
that's how I kind of think it.
Transforms the anger, I guess.
But I got a question about that, because, like, in terms of making something cool, like, if there's something that's sold at the dollar store, then, you know, the cool people make it cool, right? Like, it's not the one person that's making a lot of money off it that's selling it that really contributed to the, like, style or contribute to the meaning that's being sold. So, like, in that sense, you know, there's a separation out of, like, Jay-Z versus everybody else that he was hanging out with before he got big. So I guess I'm curious what y'all think about that part of the question.
I guess it just really depends on who beats you to it, if that makes sense. So, like, yeah, the dope boy style was existing. He didn't create it, but it was his idea to, like, I guess, capitalize off of it. And it,
like, Nicki Minaj's shit or get off the pot line.
But then it's not even just a matter of, like, oh, he just up and one day decided he wanted to, like, create this line and sell it. Like, he had the resources from him being a very popular rapper and all that. So it's like a lot of dudes probably have better ideas, better fashion ideas than Jay-Z, but they just didn't have the resources, which is the whole point of being stuck in the ghetto and the cycle of just not having a light at the end of the tunnel like everybody else has. So I think for the hood to see that happen, it kind of, I guess, felt good too, because it's just like, all right, the y'all shitted on us, excuse my language, but now we're, like, hot. So
I argue that we've always been hot. And the denial of our influence is what makes me so upset. It's the denial and the mockery that comes along with it. I'm a black man that owned over, I want to say, 200 pairs of Jordans and Nikes. I remember when it was just me, someone that looked like me, maybe. People that were Puerto Rican, Spanish, Latin, and maybe two or three Asian Americans in line at Foot Locker waiting for shoes. And then as the time passed, it went from the news making fun of us lining up every single year for Jordans to now I'm watching every soccer mom line up for their son or daughter to buy them the Jordans that they used to make fun of at a higher price than I used to pay it for. And it's ruined it too. It ruined something that I held dear, that I used to be made fun of. I can't believe this black guy bought a $200 pair of shoes and he lives in Newark, New Jersey, somewhere like that. And now everyone else wants it. I just, like, I see.
I will say, can I say one comment about that? Just so I've lived in Brooklyn for 20 years, but I am originally from Texas. So I'm here as y'all's native informant about places that are not New York, but it's Houston, Texas. And yeah. I will say one thing that people don't understand if they don't live in a place where you walk around is that your clothes are like your car. You actually need to have like a decent pair of shoes. Like if you wear a $10 pair of shoes, you're going to be wearing that for a week in New York. You got to walk. You got to walk places. Mm-hmm. And that never comes up in that whole making fun of people for buying
expensive quality shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like I like to reiterate what you were saying, like. The quality of the shoe was always quite important, but what's killing me right now is I'm seeing a lot of white people walking around in Air Force Ones, and culturally it's blowing my mind to see the way they're laced up and just to see white people in black Air Force Ones. And to me, I see black Air Force Ones, I'm like, oh, this dude's up to no good. Like it is literally a symbol. It's a symbol that everyone else is walking around. Yeah, it's like when you appropriate a culture and you don't understand the culture. I think that's where the anger and the pushback comes from.
But I don't know. Like, have you ever? I don't know if anybody in this chat has ever started a trend. But if you ever like experienced starting a trend, a lot of the times you're gonna get mad hate first.
Yeah.
And then it'll start to catch on and then everybody's doing it. And then they all of a sudden forgot who started it. Unless you're like, you know, Jay-Z or whatever. But like, usually when something starts, people usually hate it. They got everything to say about it. So I don't know. It's like, it's tricky.
It's definitely tricky. Sorry, what were you gonna say, Gordon?
I was gonna ask Tristan, you what is your background, your heritage?
I'm Russian. No.
You could be. I believe you.
Yeah, true.
I asked that at a party, a DJ host like said it on the mic. Are you from Russia? I'm like, come on, son. Anyway, I was born here. I was born in Staten Island.
Okay.
Staten Island too. But my mom was born in Liberia. She was raised in Jamaica. Oh. My father's background is from Honduras. His parents are from Honduras. And then he was born here. And my mom migrated here from all of that.
Wow.
As a woman of color living in America, do you find it as a flattery that when you see someone not from where you're from, using your vernacular, your kind of style and flair, something that you would have been made fun of at first, and now it's become a normalized thing that you normally like. For example, I knew for certain that I couldn't have like dreads like this in the office, that if I wanted to have an accountant job, I would have to lose something that I hold dear to me so I could fit in. And now the same thing that I was scared would stop me from having a job is being employed by someone else. Because like they could be white and with dreads and they can still have that job. And that's where my like kind of confusion and anger comes from.
No, I agree with that. And I see your point because like there's certain things that grind my gears too. Like, or certain things that make me happy that I see now. Like for example, news anchors with natural hair. Like first time I seen that, like a news anchor with just a fro out, that made me like utterly joyful.
Right.
Or like sometimes I see like women who aren't black with like box braids. I think it's weird because their hair texture really isn't made for.
It makes you look a little bald.
That hairstyle is like, all right. Or like, yeah, like, all right, white people with locks. Like, it's like, okay, well, we aren't able to get jobs with that hairstyle, which is like even a cultural hairstyle, a religious hairstyle to some groups in the black community. So it's just kind of like, okay, wow. Like, yeah, you do feel like, you know, you feel angry because the imbalance of equality is just like in your face. It's like, and, you know, and black people try to ignore a lot of shit so we don't like set this country on fire.
I have a weird perspective. This is probably explains part of my perspective on it. Like growing up, I'm half Italian, half black. And growing up, I like went through like Brooklyn public school system. But like the schools I went to were like, I was probably one of the few black kids at my school. Cause I was like growing up like in Cobble Hill. So I guess that was mostly like white Dominican Arab area, when I was like coming up, But like when I would wear, I would like to wear like baggy jeans and like t-shirts and nice sneakers. And then I would sometimes like a few weeks later, like if some of the cool white kids were also wearing it, I kind of would take it as like, I'm like setting this trend, like flattery in a way. So like growing up, maybe that gave me a different reaction to like cultural appropriation as, but only really as fashion goes. Like it does kind of irk me to see certain like people in music, like not like really paying homage, or people like in, or like even like any kind of art really.
Or people, or I'm Mexican. So people during Cinco de Mayo, that's super annoying during like, it's like, they don't even know that this is not even Mexican Independence Day. Yeah. And they don't even celebrate it over there. So, and it's also an excuse for businesses to make more money and for liquor sales to go up and all of that. So it's just when something is used and not respected or given credit and it's been done throughout history, like, even in class, when we did talk a little bit about this, about the black rice, for example, that author Judith Carney wrote about, and she describes how rice existed in West African society for a millennium before Europeans arrived and the slave trade began. The idea that Europe brought rice to West Africa and then took it to the Americas is a complete lie. Erasing the origins of the crop and the role of Africans and African-American slaves in transferring the seed, the cultivation skills, and the cultural practices necessary for establishing it in the New World. So they don't didn't just take the rice itself, but they took their techniques.
Like that's the real cultural appropriation.
Yeah, the way of making it
for history, the history of something, I think is the worst way to do. That's harmful.
That's everywhere. And I would just say real quick about that book, Black Rice, because it's one of my absolute favorite books. So if anybody is interested in like homework, that's the one.
Yeah, I want to read it
for today. But what I love most about it is she points out, right, this is the slave trade. They weren't just appropriating cultures. They were appropriating people, right? They were stealing, kidnapping people out of Africa. And what she demonstrates is, you know, the idea that I think a lot of people have, that this was just sort of, you just need any given person, right, to come and do this hard labor, you know, in slave plantations and sugar, you know, plantations and cotton plantations. That's not accurate. The slavers actually targeted people for their not just their cultural knowledge, but even for their personal skills and techniques and abilities and, you know, genius when it comes to everything from, you know, cultivating rice is her example. But you could think of this is something that's true like across the board if we actually were to dig in and look at what the history of the Atlantic slave trade is. And it didn't stop with the question of kidnapping people from Africa. It actually continued in terms of how the slave trade continued to exist in the world. But then also, you know, after the fact, when everybody is, when now the question is like, who you're employing, who you're not employing, whose ideas are you stealing, not stealing, whose land are you stealing, not stealing. This isn't selected at random, and it's not just opportunistic. They actually knew enough to know who to target, right, for these specific ends. And it's about stealing people's brain power and their cultural, you know, genius.
Yeah.
Or for the purposes of making money. And there's in that sense, there is a zero sum, right? There's a zero sum game. And that's where I see the biggest, you know, what sets me off when I see examples like this.
Before I read that, I didn't even know Europe was taking credit for rice. I really always thought rice came from Africa. Like, literally, that's all we eat. Like,
right.
And I also want to say my grandfather is like the lineage of the slaves that got sent back.
Right. The Afro-Liberians.
Yeah, he's on his side.
Sorry, I mean the America-Liberians, right.
Yeah, Liberians. Yeah, but not my grandmother. But
I tried to get my students to study Liberia this year, and it was fifth in the running, and I'm pretty mad about it. That was going to be the best.
I like what you were saying about. I was like what you were saying about just giving. Like, I think that's another level besides financial that cultural appropriation really should be examined from. It's just as simple as acknowledgement. That can go such a long way. Even if it's not even financial, the acknowledgement that of where it came from, It's mm-hmm. it goes way further. Like a lot of people don't even know the oldest university in the world is not Oxford. It is a university in Africa. And when you tell people that, they lose their mind. Like, nah, no way. Like Africa invented the fork. No one knows that. Like, there's so much history that
all
goes
along. All of human culture comes from Africa. Like, that's what the denial is about.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The human beings are from Africa. Like, I don't know what to say about that. Besides, where else could it come from?
Kate, I'm happy you said it and I didn't have to say it.
Where else could it come from?
It's true.
I say the same thing, but when I say it, people go, oh, here comes something militant. And it's like, no, we just...
Something militant.
Exactly.
Well, it is militant if people are all aligned against you. And I would just say, accept the compliment. Accept the compliment. It's fine to be militant.
I believe so. But like, also, like, I'm still a black man trying to get a job, trying to keep my head above. I have to use a tactful hammer instead of a sledgehammer. You know what I mean? Like, I can't always beat people over the head with history and facts because so many people aren't ready for it. And
child.
And another thing too, a lot of people just honestly don't care or give a fuck, which is hard when it comes down to talk about cultural appropriation. Because people go, they're wearing Air Force Ones and like, oh, I fit in. And they don't know why they fit in. They just know this is what the community has and I'm going to use it too.
Here's the thing. This is the part I disagree on with most people about cultural appropriation. I just have to say it. Like, I think that you should be allowed to wear Air Force Ones, whether you're white, black, Indian, Spanish or whatever. You don't have to know what Air Force
talking about not allowing it.
No, I'm not saying that like you're not allowed to, but you know what I'm saying. I think it looks goofy and we laugh at it when we see Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi dressed in dashikis.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Remember that?
Yeah.
That was so weird.
That was creepy.
It's like something like something is definitely off about it for sure, right? But it's not like I'm not mad. I'm laughing. Like we're all laughing at it, right? No.
Well, but I mean, still, the point that Gordon was making, which is the question is like, do you know what it means? Like, why are you laughing at it? Like,
that's a good point. Yeah.
You know, and so like you can and like laughing can be a expression of aggression, right? Like even if you look to not, you know, some African cultures, especially the like hunter-gatherer cultures, the Sam people in Southern Africa, they have a very egalitarian culture. The way you enforce people's like pro-social behavior is actually laughing at them. This is like, there's a whole system of this. It's like joking relationships. And I think once I describe that, y'all will all have experienced something like this in life, right? Like if somebody's getting like too big of a head about something, you just come at them and you laugh at them. You don't let them get to you, right? But then you're communicating something to them too, right? That they're stepping outside the box or they don't know what it means, right? But part of their frustration is if somebody doesn't know what it means. If I laugh at Nancy Pelosi, what does she care if you're laughing at her or I'm laughing at her, right?
Exactly.
She doesn't even register that. It doesn't communicate that. It doesn't have the power to correct her.
My point is was anyone harmed by Nancy Pelosi wearing a dashiki?
People are harmed by Nancy Pelosi every day. And thank every you.
Well, by her, by the act of wearing the dashiki though.
Yeah, that's part of the whole program.
Was the fact that they dressed up in dashikis to kind of distract from what they should have really been doing.
Yeah,
for the
that's
problem.
A good
Thank
point.
You,
yeah.
Crystal. Exactly.
Yeah, it was pointless.
So that is enough to offend and make somebody angry. Maybe.
If they were like, okay, let's abolish the police and they were working on that, we wouldn't give a shit what they were wearing.
Yeah, that's true.
We'd be like, that's kind of goofy. That's like, auntie is like, she's like a little, she doesn't have very good taste or whatever, but like, it wouldn't be upsetting. It's exactly what you're saying, Crystal. Like that was their solution to the problem of like, to the police murdering people in the streets. Come on. That doesn't make any sense.
Dashikis and kneeling. Yeah. That's angering. Like some people who, you know,
exactly.
Especially because the kneeling part is like referencing communicating with ancestors and like, I'm sorry, but Nancy Pelosi does not have any ancestors. So what is she doing kneeling down?
Hey, I am happy you're here.
Saying the truth.
Because like I get what you're saying when you're saying like what's the harm in just wearing something? There is no harm, but there is a certain level of acknowledgement that I think that should go with it. Like
I agree with that for sure.
I feel like I know more about other cultures than I than people know about my own.
You have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have to. That's so cool. You know that from Du Bois, right? I'm sure Gordon knows this one.
Yes.
Double consciousness, right?
Yes.
That's why.
Yes, I do.
That's why the TikTok stealers make bad TikTok videos, because they don't have double consciousness. They don't even know what they're getting wrong. They don't know what they're thinking about.
Yeah, it goes with double consciousness, and it goes a lot with, in my opinion, empathy. Like, people don't have enough empathy for other cultures and what it's like to be a minority in this society.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people overlook Black women and their contributions to everything that has built hip hop, and no one wants to even focus on that. They give we big up Biggie Smalls, Tupac.
Where's every Roxanne? Single day. Who's heard from Roxanne lately?
Yeah, Roxanne Shanté. I feel bad for her. She's like the queen of did you see the movie on Netflix?
No, is there a movie on Netflix?
Yes. Yeah, Roxanne, Roxanne. Our friend's in it. Our friend plays
Bismarck.
That's
what I'm doing tonight. Thank y'all. Yeah. Y'all
it's great. It's a great movie too. They did a good job.
Like, my point is, like, I just it's infuriating to see how much is stolen on a daily basis and no credit or acknowledgement is given. Like, one of my favorite rappers used to be Action Bronson, until Action Bronson couldn't just come out and just say, hey, I kind of got my style from Ghostface Killah.
We all knew it.
We all heard it. Perfect. This is what we were about to transition into, the music, the music aspect.
Oh yeah, we still haven't gotten into all of that.
Let's talk about it. Like, I think that it depends on, like, you could tell after a certain period of time what an artist acknowledges. And I think the art itself, like, you could tell the reaction to the art itself over time, like, where the artist's heart was. And let me, like, a lot of people accuse Eminem of cultural appropriation. I don't agree with that one, just because I feel like Eminem grew up in the trailer park. He grew up where he was, like, the only white guy around. He kind of also gave homage in his music. He says he would have sold half if he was black. Like, I feel like he acknowledges what he needs to acknowledge to be able to rap. And he understands and respects the culture.
Can I say something about Eminem?
Sorry. Go ahead.
But I basically agree with you, but I want to make your argument a little bit better for you.
Okay.
Because Eminem grew up in 8 Mile, right? Which is actually a poor white neighborhood. And the question I have for everybody, whenever you point to, like, a poor white neighborhood, in South Africa, there's, like, poor white homeless settlements, right? In a country where 90% of the people are Black African people, you know, and a very small, like, only 5% are white people, there's white homeless settlements. Let me ask you a question. What do you have to do to keep your homeless settlement all white?
Oh,
that's a good point. Was his trailer park all white though? Like legit? His trailer park was legit. I thought that his trailer park
had... 8 Mile built a wall between themselves and the Black neighborhood next door.
Right? I did not know that.
Yes, that's what happened, right? That's why it's 8 Mile.
But the poor white people living in 8 Mile don't control that. Or was it like it wasn't like a neighborhood watch?
No,
it was
a grassroots initiative, I'm sorry to say.
Oh,
but that's not on Eminem, right? He didn't decide that. And he did, in fact, like, go, you know, he crossed that literal color line, right? And he participated. He, like, battled people, right? He did. And in order to win, like, in order to do that well, right, you have to actually know what you're referencing. You have to use, you know, the language, the system, right, that everybody else is using at a certain stage, right? We can certainly look and see he got more credit for doing what he did because of the novelty of him, like, actually being a good white rapper, right, of which there are very, very few. And because he had the connections, what I would call as an anthropologist, the lineage, right? The question of lineage is very important in hip hop. Like, who raised you? Who brought you in? Who's vouching for you? Right. And Eminem did all that. Right. And he's referencing and talking back to people all the time. Now, there's a lot of things that are wrong with Eminem. Right. Like, that you might say, like, he is, like, a homophobic, violent, misogynist, you know, all that stuff. But in terms of cultural appropriation, you know, the only thing that you could say about it is that he made more money off of it than he would if he didn't have the novelty of being, like, a good white rapper. And I would say about him, you know, I'm like a secret fan. That's a problematic fave of mine because of all his content.
You want me to help you real quick? He actually is an activist now. He even has, like, a pro-gay song that he just released called...
I know, he's really trying.
He's really trying to do...
But the thing is, like, I like even his really wrong shit. You know, like, you can't help but like, because it's funny. It's funny. Like,
he's, it's good, expression. He's a, I look at it as,
he's a good lyricist. He makes funny jokes. Like, that shit is funny. Like, even if it's really wrong. But like, you know, the other thing he does is he acknowledges that positionality in his song, in his music all the time. Right. And it's not as like a, it's not a white pride. He's not like, let me identify as a white person. He's saying like, I know this is happening. Right. It's an acknowledgement of that fact. And you can see the difference, because there are some people who do this as a kind of like, they really believe in it. They really think they're white.
Yeah.
Whereas like, I feel like Eminem is telling us like, I know this is my situation. Like, here's what I am. But it's not like, he's not asserting any content of whiteness.
Let me
everything give, that he.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Cut me off.
I was going to give you. I was just going to give you a contrast to what I'm talking about. Now, now, before I'm going to preface this, I actually am a little. I was a Lil Dicky fan. You know, like
his name is Lil Dicky. Quick,
you assume it's comedy rap. Like all his, he used to release a bunch of great, like really funny little comedy rap videos, and they were. He's a great lyricist too. He's super talented, but. Like this song, when I first heard it, kind of rubbed me the wrong way, but then I kind of wrote it off as a joke. But now this song basically got banned. When Lil Dicky made his show Dave on FX, they basically took this song down off all social media.
And I'm now looking only at Crystal's face right now.
And now only his fans basically are reposting this song, but it's really hurting him. They don't realize it, because when the reaction to this video, now that it's reposted like by its fans, now you know what the music was for. This is what the person who reposted it said when they reposted it. They said, wait, is this the right link? Oh, this is not even it. There's a...
That's it. I mean, does he have more than one song?
No, it was this thing, but we saw a version of this repost. Oh no, it was the audio version with the lyrics. So someone reposts this and was like, writes as a disclaimer, do not complain. I will go through and delete any comment. This is just a joke. Like, if you're posting it automatically going defensive, you know it's offending people. You know that it's might be not right, but
you know you don't have an argument if you're not gonna let people comment on it.
Yeah.
You know you're wrong.
So I'm just gonna play. Yeah. I'm just gonna play two little clips from the very beginning, just to give you the idea, and the very end of the song, and we could kind of talk about like the difference between using like a culture like for your own personal gain and wanting to be a part of the culture. Okay, you guys could see me, right? The screen.
Wanna with the boy, cause the way I'm living life is a motherfucking joy. On some grown man B.I. I could have been a girl or any ethnicity up in the world, but I'm running with the top back. I ain't gotta worry where the cops at. I ain't gotta wear a fucking bra strap. Me and the crew, I'm really doing everything that we like to. Man, it's a damn good day to be a white dude. Shit, I'm living good up in this bitch. Dicky rolling around the city blowing good
well,
up in that bitch.
Basically, you get the idea of the song. It's basically like, I understood it at first as like a parody of hip hop, like you're flaunting your whiteness or you're flaunting your white superiority. And I understand, and maybe the, like when hip hop first started, you're supposed to go against the grain, I guess. So I thought that's what he was doing when we first listened. But here right here is like the worst part of the song. I'm just going to play like the part that like really kind of got me a little bit like irked when I first heard it.
You're so patient, Joshua. For social purposes.
And please don't take this as me just disparaging black people. Ain't about that. It's about me being happy that I'm white.
That's, you know, the KKK says, by the way.
But on that note, can someone explain to me why Fat Joe and any other person of Hispanic descent is allowed to say the N-word? I mean, I guess it's unrelated, but like that shit don't make any sense. I've been thinking about that shit a lot. Because I mean, if I can say the N-word... like, it was,
why are you thinking about that a lot? That's my big question.
Yeah, like
if it's so great being white... It was so great being, if like you're so proud of being white, of whatever that fucking means, why are you thinking about this so much? Why do you want to, why do you want to be doing everything that black people are doing? That just strikes me as like a bald-faced lie.
It reminds me of kids like who grew up like doing all this shit that pisses us off. You know, like there's this kid I grew up with in high school. He's like a white Jewish kid. And he wanted me to help him get in. Like, we used to rap in a lunchroom, and he wanted me to get him a seat at the table. I get him a seat at the table, and he's like ripping. I find out like later, because once I start downloading Eminem's underground shit on Napster, he's taking Eminem's shit, first of all. And then he's turning my black friends against me, saying I talk white and shit.
Oh yeah.
Oh, like he said that about you?
Yeah, so that's what like this Little Dicky video reminds me of, that type of guy, right? Like he like just stumbled upon this magic lamp of rap talent. He doesn't even understand what hip hop is. But the thing is, like when I first saw this shit, I thought it was just a huge satire and I kind of still let it slide. But then like going back and like reading people like actually like Vice News like interviews him about it. Nancy, you want to read, why don't you could do the do the Vice News part.
Gina the crime.
give him the Vice News interview. I was shocked. I couldn't believe this. Even like when I started watching the show Dave of Lil Dicky, that's when it occurred to me that he's actually like serious,
because like
the whole show was like about like him saying, no, I'm not a comedy rapper. This is not just for jokes. I'm trying to be the greatest of all time who's ever done it in this field. That's basically what the, so I was like, is this maybe just going to be some kind of character development thing? But now that we're like doing this podcast and I read this article, I'm shocked. Just
Dunning-Kruger combined with sociopathy all in one neat package.
And I feel dumb, so I was like a huge fan too. I like listen to every single song he's ever.
I'm so sorry for you too, Joshua.
So in the article on vice.com, the author said, so I called Lil Dicky up and ended up conducting an interview that was one of the most excruciating in my history as a journalist.
Wow.
In the span of half an hour, the ad creative turned rapper rattled off his resume to me for no apparent reason, complained about not getting laid on tour, and claimed he had more to lose by rapping than a poor black person might, because unlike a poor black person, he had job prospects. He was defensive, combative, badgering, and self-conscious in turn. In essence, he was everything that rappers he claims to be emulating are not. So,
he's paradoxical.
Is that crazy?
That's not crazy. That's who he is. That is like... That's like,
how could you say that to a magazine, though?
because you have no self-awareness, none, zero.
No self-awareness, and he doesn't fear any retaliation about it. He had a song with Chris Brown.
He
had a song with Chris Brown where he pretended to switch bodies with Chris Brown.
No.
And his part where Chris Brown would sing was the part where if he was Chris Brown, that he would just say the N-word.
He just
rattles it off at least about 15 times back to back. No lyric, just 15 times back to back.
I remember that. And it's Chris Brown singing it, but still, the idea that he wants to say it.
That he wants to say
it's supposed to be him.
He wants to be black when he says that, but he doesn't want to be black when he has to worry about where the cops are.
Yeah, that's what that whole music video is about him not wanting, him being super happy he's white because he could smoke weed in front of the cops and do all this stuff.
He
wants to say the N-word though, because Hispanic people.
Let me ask you a question. If you're not, let's say you're white and the cops don't harass you. Okay, fine. I've experienced that in my life, right? Does that mean you're not worried about where they are and what they're doing? What does that say about you if you're not worried about where they are and what they're doing? That means you don't give a shit about a single black person who exists.
Yeah.
Single person of color. Like, that song is an ode to so many white men in this country who feel unseen.
And that's what it was, because that's who's reposting it. But I'm really sorry, because this is getting really juicy and great right now, but we are running out of time. But let's go around real quick. We could give a quick final point each. I know this is a super fun episode. I knew this was going to be a good episode. But
I think we're all riled up.
Yeah, well, you can
there's
go around
so many cases.
And plug what you want to plug and like give a final point. And we could start with you, Crystal, and like work around the clock.
Oh, I have to give the final thought?
Or you don't have to give a final thought. You can plug what you want to plug if you don't want to go last.
Let the professor go first. Okay. Do some points we can piggyback off.
Yeah, all right. Okay. So I want to say, I think when we're talking about white people, which if we ever did a part two of this episode, we had some other things to talk about, which is like cultural appropriation.
I mean, we didn't even get to the...
let me speak as the token white person in this room right here, that I think when we're talking about white people and cultural appropriation, the question is whiteness, right? The question is whiteness. And the question is whether or not you take that seriously as something that you put at the center of your identity, right? And my question for the audience and for all of you is like, what is the content of whiteness that can be be used in that way? Because what I'd argue to you is that there is no content to whiteness aside from racism. Right, the act of identifying as white, being proud of being white, asserting you know, whiteness as a culture, right, is an act of asserting racism as a culture, as a defining aspect. Because you could be, you said you're Italian, Josh, but you didn't say you were half white and half black. Although later after the show, we could talk about which half is which or whatever. But like, you know, there's cultural content to being Italian that is distinct, right, from
Polish, yeah.
Just, yeah, from or other white, shit, right? Yeah. Yeah, and like there are black Italian people. There are many black Italian people. What's this? There's a famous baseball player, for example. I forget. That's the riddle, right? That you ask, who's the, you know, the Italian baseball player? I don't know shit about baseball, but I do know shit about anthropology of race. And so the question is, what is whiteness? And I think there's no content there. And that's why people are filling in content and need to cut off its cultural source and origin in order to maintain this, like the any sense of self and identity. But it boils down to racism and every act of creating whiteness as such, making it be something real that you take seriously, is an act of racism. And we've just seen that over and over in the context of this episode. So that's my final manifesto or whatever. But other people can take it from here.
Probably cool. Where can we follow you, by the way?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter. It's at Kate Griff. I'm not the best twit person. If you're on Facebook, like mindset. Old people, you can, I hang out on Facebook a lot. You can friend me. And I have a Patreon and my name is Kate Doyle Griffiths. And there I do some podcasting. I do some writing. I do some other kind of stuff. So yeah, that's the place. Oh, and please actually, more importantly than all that, check out my magazine that I'm one of the editors of called Spectre Journal. We just launched this year. It's a revolutionary Marxist magazine, but it's one that's committed to the centrality of race, of anti-racism, of pro-queer politics, pro-black politics, pro-feminist politics, to that project of revolutionary class consciousness. So that's Spectre Journal. Please check it out. Thank you, guys.
Cool.
Thank you.
And you could go, Gordon.
Hey, you know, Professor, I you said it best. The only a couple things that I would add is just if anything you take from, well, it's funny I say take from, cultural appropriation, you do it. My whole goal is to, with anything I do, try to give respect to where things originate from. It might mean nothing to you, but it means something vastly huge to that culture. With that being said, I do a live show and an internet show and a podcast called Drunk Black History, where we focus on Black history that is not Dr. King, that is not Malcolm X.
Right now.
That is not Harriet Tubman, because I believe America has got very comfortable with only talking about three historical Black figures. It takes.
At my daughter's school, they said you can do anybody for Black History Month, but it cannot be Rosa Parks.
See, and do you see how common it is? Like with Black History, we return to McDonald's. We only celebrate what's on the menu. And with Drunk Black History, we decided to get out of that and show everyone that there is a deeper rooted history that you should know and talk about. My biggest part of it, I love talking about Black women from the past that carried a pistol. Stagecoach Mary is one of my favorite characters from Black history. She killed multiple men just being a postal worker, and no one knows this at all. She was the only woman and Black person allowed to vote in the state of, I believe, Montana, because she was that respected.
Wow, that should be a movie. The type of history. They should make a movie of her.
They should. They really should. And that's the type of history and acknowledgement that we should give out to other cultures, whether it's from hip hop or religious cultures. Just show respect. Yeah. And you can follow me at Baker Bone on Instagram and Twitter.
Awesome. Dope.
Okay, last and least, me. No. I guess my comments, my final thoughts on it is that, like, a lot of reasons why Black people don't get enough respect is in this country, in the United States of America, if we're just going to focus on this country in particular, because I have qualms about a lot of other countries. But anyway, it's because a lot of people, like Gordon was saying, they do not know what we've contributed to this land and things that we've created and just all of it, all our inventions. We know like certain things, but like Black people made like so many things, built so many things, did so many great things. And it's just like, it's always swept under the rug. So I just feel like things like that need to be highlighted more. Just pretty much what Gordon was saying, as far as like, he just told us something that we didn't even know or whatever in his wrap up. So I just feel like that needs to be highlighted more. Like, for example, the microphone that you guys are using, a Black man created that along with he had like a, I think, a German partner. But like, yeah, they collaborated and created that. And I didn't even know that till like this year, because I'm creating like a project at a corporate radio station that is for what Black people do in business and money and so forth. But it's not out yet, but it's got approved and I have working on it. So I can't really talk about it really. But anyway, I'm Crystal. You can follow me on Instagram, Crystal_Grant. And I know we have to wrap, but give props when props are due, and keep the conversation going, because if we stop talking about it, then we can't solve the problem and it won't exist.
Thank you.
So glad to have met you. And I'm glad to meet all you guys too. This is amazing.
Yeah, thank you. And you can follow our podcast, everyone, at BWT Podcast on Instagram. And we'll put this out in a few days, and we'll hashtag But Why Though Pod. If you have any comments of your own, listeners, feel free to hashtag us back, reply to us. Maybe we'll reply to you back, and we could have a little Twitter debate. And also, you can follow me at Gosh Carter on Twitter and Instagram. And
you can follow me at Miss Nayanci, MSNAYANCI on Instagram and Twitter. And we'll see you guys soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.